My name is Manuel. I'm an addict. And Beverly asked me, could I go first? And I said, if they canceled this meeting, I wouldn't be too mad, because I am nervous. I am nervous. I am nervous, but I understand today that I am with brothers and sisters that are, you know, on the same path, you know, one day at a time, 1 minute at a time, and 1 second at a time, you know, and that's how I came in, broken, busted, and disgusted. I need to get this out the way, because a couple of weeks ago I was at a funeral, and it was in church, and I told a lie. So, and this person was very special to me. That's my sponsor's wife, Brenda, and I owe her an apology, because it was not necessary for me to, you know, it just comes natural to me. That's who I am. That's who I had become. I lived a life for 30-some years, just lying, cheating, stealing, conniving. That's who I had become. It took about at the age of 32 to tell my mom I love her, because there was no love at the house. Narcotics Anonymous taught me that. And it's funny, because I'm here and I'm looking across, and I'm, again, I said, like, I was nervous. But that's not my problem. My problem is, if I was to take my wallet out, turn the lights off, I have nothing to fear from you people. I'm the one that steals from me, you know. And it's funny, because nothing around the house was, you know, off limits. A dollar or whatever it was, change, you know, as a little child, I was always taking it. And I grew up doing the same thing. I remember one time they had asked, had I seen $5 in the dryer? And I said, no. I think it took me 5 years to make an amends to that little five-year-old girl that I had taken the $5 from. But it's funny how all that life took about 30-some years when I got to recovery for me to even try to do something different. Narcotics Anonymous is the only thing that I have ever been a part of that belongs, that I'm welcome, even with my funky attitude, you know, because I came in mad, angry. I thought I was having fun. And you guys came and got me from my job. Of course, I had lost a career, friendships, relationships, and I had made a mess of those. People talk about burning bridges, man. I was blowing them up, because there was no way possible for me to even conceive in my mind how anything else was going to be restored. Nowhere. But it took my sponsor, who guided me to this higher power. Now, all the stuff that I believe that the higher power did, and I heard somebody else say it, he doesn't do. And all the things that he didn't, that I didn't know he does, he do do. All he ever wanted for me was just to live this life, you know, that I'm living today, you know. And a lot of times I get in my way. By that I mean, I'll find an easier, softer way. I'm the one that wanted the Vietnam story, but I didn't want to go to Vietnam. And a lot of times I hear people talk about, give accolades to certain of my peers, and they say, you know, you're doing a wonderful job, and I wonder, how come I don't get that? But I haven't done anything to deserve it. So I understand today that it's the way I walk. It's not what I say, you know. But it's been a long journey for me. I got here at the age of 30, homeless, 2 Safeway bags, and that's the existence of my whole life. Today, got degrees and accolades and diplomas and things that were never promised. I never saw those. And the only thing that was keeping me back was I remember going to school and people make a joke. And the joke was gone. They were gone. And I'm still pondering that that joke. You know, I'm not worth it. I'm no good. I'll never be nothing. And that's how I lived my life for the rest of, you know, when I came into Narcotics Anonymous. Even in recovery, I was still doing the same things, except not using. Again, it was the relationship that my sponsor took me right to the source, and that was my higher power. And for that, I appreciate him. And I tell him every day, you know, I love you. And as a matter of fact, it was in Narcotics Anonymous. I got the first kiss from a man. And that's how I learned how to kiss my grandkids. Because when I got here, the kids and I talk about the exes, and I don't know if anybody know about what the exes are. That's when you whip a child one way and then whip a child the other way, and it makes the exes. And that's me. I grew up that way, so that's all I knew how to do with a grandchild. The children's, that's a whole different story. But they were a mess, and I'm still making a lot of reparations for that. Talking about that child, he asked me to borrow the truck one day, and I told him no 21 times. I said no, no, no. Then he convinced me. So what happened was, he was involved in a hit and run 3 years ago. So in December, 3 years later, I got a summons to go to court, and they wanted a whole lot of money. So what happened was, I got the attorney, and we went. But all those times, in a period of 6 months, I was on my knees begging God, you know, make this go away and help me, and crying. What had happened was, and they talk about it all the times, when at the end of my road, when you ain't got no more where to go, what to do, you know, no more ins and outs, no more hustle, no more nothing, and you finally get on your knees, and April the 1st, they said the case was settled. So I'm getting glimpses of what my power, higher power, actually does. Because in my mind, as soon as I saw that letter that they said that they wanted this much money, I sold my house, the car. I was gonna go live with my daughter and forget about everything else. But I can talk a good program. I can talk about how God is doing all this for me. But where's my faith? I tell you, and my sponsor and I talk about this all the time, about if I was in trouble and I was going to a castle or a crack house, I would probably choose the crack house because I'm familiar with that. That's what I know. And it's taken a lot of years for me to get out of that mentality. So it's not so much that I changed the way I think, it's the things that I do. Go to meetings, talk to my sponsor. This is the big one for me, help somebody else, you know, because it was always about me, you know, me, myself, and I. I had nothing to give to nobody. And I'm talking about on the inside, I was just an empty. So anybody that said anything about me, I knew it was true, but it was like, okay, so what are you saying? Now, see, on the flip side, when somebody does something good for me, I'm hesitant, and I'll run it through my mind about, okay, what is it that he wants? What do I have to do? Because you were nice to me. It's taken a long time for me to get to where I'm comfortable. And I'll share this. Last week, I was told, I've been in the same relationship for about 11 years, and I was told the grass was greener on the other side. 11 years later, right? And they said my grass was brown. So I know this about me. No, it's not. I know what my worth is today. You know, I know what I'm capable of, what my potential is. You know, and I know what I've done. What had happened was 11 years straight, I was pouring out all this money, gifts, and presents, and trying to buy love, because that's all I knew. So it seemed to work for a while. Every time she'd get mad, I'd say, okay, here, go to the mall, you know, go buy you something, go. And that lasted for a while. What I did something different in this year was there was no birthday gifts, there was no Christmas gift, there was no Valentine's gift. But what I did was I spent some time with this relationship. We were watching a movie for about 2 hours, just sitting there, her and I. And it's getting a little better to where there's a little bit of intimacy, a little bit better where there's a little bit of a trust between her and I, a little bit of a friendship. And by that, I mean where I don't have to buy you. You know, I don't have to buy the love. You know, I'm doing it out of my own, from the inside. If I'm given anything else from Narcotics Anonymous, aside from using the drugs, you know, I've come a long way, because I can go share that with somebody else. And I have people in my life today that they're dear. And by that, I mean, I don't mess around with them. I don't take it for granted. I don't abuse them. The last thing I do want to say is, it took, when I left home, I was 18 years old. And I left from Texas to D.C. And I said, okay, well, if I'm not home, I'm not harming my parents anymore. But what I had failed to realize that my mom was absent a son. And I'm the oldest one, so I understand today that it's going to take me at least another 30 years for me to make those amends. Because I'll think if I say, I'm sorry, Mom, that's it, I'm over with. But it's going to take another 30 years for me to even say, to do the amends, to let her be comfortable where she has a grown son. Of course, I got other nine brothers and sisters, and they were also out, an older brother. But today, you know, I'm getting better with the granddad, the uncle, the brother, the friend, and it's getting better where I don't have to. What am I getting out of this? You know, even if it's a good feeling, I know that's what. Because what happened was, somebody asked me what were my dreams, and I said I want to be rich, and I said that almost automatic. But here's the thing. Because I see other people that have friends and they talk and they communicate and they do things. So what happened was, this particular person was put in my life today. And we do things and we go places. And what happened was, I did not realize that at that time, this particular person had given me a whole lot more than what money can do. He's given me a companionship, a friendship, and with no strings attached, right? And we go places, we do things. He was not able to come to this convention due to his illness, but people have taught me how to do this, do, do for somebody else. I think my sponsor had 5 years when he was taking me around to meetings and you know, doing things, Pizza Hut and stuff like that. And I didn't know what that was about, right? Because I remember trying to give him some money, and he said, do it for somebody else. It took me almost 20 years for me to do something for somebody else without those strings. But I'm understanding today that in order for me to keep it, I have to give it away. I'm running out of, because if I keep talking more, I know I'll start lying. So I think that's pretty much what I have to say. But again, I emphasize that if you're new here today and you have no idea what's going on, just keep coming back. Grab on to one person, anybody, just grab on, you know, strap yourself for the journey, because it's going to be awesome. And I'm having the best time of my life today. Once I get out of here, I got my 5 grandkids. They're here with me, and we're going to do it up. So that's enough out of me, and thank you for being here, and thank you for letting me chair.
All right, thank you. I'm going to introduce our second speaker, Beverly.
Hi, I'm Beverly. I'm an addict. And, good Lord. I got a big mouth, so. And I'm glad to be here today, this morning. First, I want to give, you know, honor to God for waking me up this morning. I know that today. My life wouldn't be where it is if it wasn't for him. And I need to give honor where honor is due. And then I want to thank the committee for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope on the triangle of self-obsession. I want to thank my girlfriend, Vanessa, for riding down with me and talking to me and keeping me relaxed and out of my head, thinking about what I'm going to say and how I'm going to say it. And you know what? You never say what you plan you're going to say in your head anyway. So I'm going to just kind of let God do his thing with me today. And it's funny, when I first was asked to speak, they gave me a totally different topic. And the topic was something really simple like service or, you know, why are we here? Something too really simple. And I said, okay, I can do that. But when she emailed me the confirmation, it said triangle of self-obsession. I said, God, what are you doing here? You know, and if anybody know me, they know that I'm always going to talk about me. I really don't have time to be talking about nobody else. The best way I believe I can help somebody is to talk about me and how this applies to me. I'm not a literature quoter and all of that other kind of stuff. I'm going to talk about me and how triangle of self-obsession applies to me and my life. You know, and I want to do the immediate thing and say, well, I'm not self-obsessed. You know, I got 16 years. You know, I've done some work. You know, I know how to give to someone else. I know how to be of service. I'm a giver. I have a giving heart. I know that about me. So how can I be self-obsessed? You know, but when I take a look at different areas of my life, and you know, it's funny because right now on my job, I'm right here when the literature talks about resentment and anger. You know, I'm right here. And I want to believe that because I've done some step work, I've done a fourth step, you know, I've talked about some things that I've overcome, you know, that I moved from a place. But that's not so. You know, what I'm finding out is that There's still some pain on the inside of me that people touch a lot of times. And when they touch it, I react. And out my mouth I say that I forgive. You know, I could talk to you, you know. I probably even could do for you. But deep down inside, I'm still holding on to that thing that has caused me pain. And so what happens is I'm really holding on to a resentment. And the resentment then turns into anger. And if I don't address it, I don't know about nobody else, but if I don't address it, then it turns into rage. And when I get into a rageful state, I ain't paying attention to no one, nobody, nothing. And I'm in a blindful, oblivious state. And when I finally calm down and I look around, it's a combat zone. I done created more damage. And I'm at a place where, you know, yesterday I was at my computer. I work from home, and a coworker emailed me a email because it's gotten to a place where people were kind of afraid to come and say things to me because of my reaction. And so she found it safe to email me. And when I read what she was saying in the email, I just broke down and cried because I didn't want to believe that was me. And I immediately moved into the denial. That ain't me. Why you ain't looking at yourself? I ain't the only one that be walking around angry. Everybody get angry. It's a natural emotion. You know, I don't see you sending emails to this person and that person. Now, I really want to focus on them. You know, what is it that you doing? You know, and not really taking a look at Beverly to see if Beverly, is this true? Is this you? You know, what I'm really finding out when I get honest with myself, the self-obsession is that I really want people to behave the way that I think that they should behave. They need to speak and do what I think that they need to be doing. And when they don't, and things don't go the way that I think, it's self-obsession is about me. When I... It's called control. And the more I exercise control over people's lives, people, places, and things, the more pain I get. And I can hear, you know, let go and let God. That's easy said. But when I'm caught up in self, myself, I ain't thinking about God. I ain't thinking about you. I ain't thinking about no literature. I ain't thinking about nothing. All I see is what I want to accomplish. You know, in the past year or so, I want to talk about a particular situation where I really had to take a look at how self-absorbed I was and not really considering the other people. And you know, we, in this program, you really do get to a place where the program becomes selfless. You know, it should be more about other people and less about yourself. Because, you know, when I was new, my sponsor told me early on, like after I celebrated a year, she used to say, Beverly, I want you to go to some new meetings and find you a newcomer and get their number and call them. And I said, what you say? Wait a minute, huh? Because, you know, I had arrived now. You know how we get a year. What you mean call them? They're supposed to call me. I've arrived, you know. She said, no, you call them. And when I was going through, she'd always tell me to go help somebody. And I never understood that. What you mean help somebody? I'm the one in need, you know. But I didn't know that when I help somebody while I'm going through, it really allows God to really work out the situation in my life because for real, I want to fix it, you know. So, I got married in 2002, and This is a gentleman that I had been obsessed about for years, and I was determined that I was going to get him. And I got him. And we got married. We moved into a nice house. I got hired by the federal government. He got hired by the state government. We each had a car. Life was wonderful. It was like the American dream. I said, I'm on my way. And I think maybe like 2-3 months into this new environment, my husband got arrested. He took a bribe and went to jail. And now I'm left in this house, one income, and I was angry, and I was hurt, and I couldn't understand how he could do this to me. I visited him one time when he was locked up. I was so angry. Now, mind you, I never missed a beat. My mortgage was paid. I didn't know how I was going to do it. My mortgage was paid. The light bill was paid. Water was paid. Everything that needed to be paid was paid. But I was angry because I couldn't understand how he could do this to me. I never really once thought what he was going through. All I focused on was, you know, me and how I felt. And even after he did the time and came on out and, you know, had to go through the probation, he lost his job and he had to resort back to doing something less than what he was used to doing, I could not in my heart forgive him. I felt like he owed me. I'm talking about self-obsession. He even mentioned it to me a couple of times, you know. And I said to him, how dare you? You did this to me. Well, that was 2002 and the 2002-2003. And I'm here to report that it's just recently, maybe within the last few months, that I really have been trying to forgive him and let that whole situation go. Now, mind you, he done came out. He got on probation. He went and got a job. You know, he had to do something that was even more humiliating for himself. And he was trying to do the best that he could. He was already feeling bad because he put me in a precarious situation. But because I was so wrapped up in my own self and my own feelings and how I was feeling, I couldn't see the forest for the trees. I couldn't even see what he was doing. I couldn't even be able to have any compassion for him because I was caught up in myself. And that was my contribution to the struggles that I was having. I really wanted to blame him. I'm telling you, and I'm sure two of my friends, they never really even heard me say this. You better be careful when you get up to the podium. Because you don't know what's going to come out your mouth, I'm telling you. I never once said to him, baby, I understand. I'm here for you. You know, when I took them vows, I was in love with the idea of marriage. And when they send their vows for better or worse, sickness and in health, to death do you part, that sound real good. Just put the ring on the finger, y'all. I want to just go around and show everybody I'm married. I'm married. But when the worst hit, you don't think about now vow. I don't know how many times I must have called my sponsor and said, you know what, guess what, I'm out of here. I don't need this. I ain't got to put up with this. I could do bad by myself. It's all about self. Never once considering, my husband's in the program as well. Never once considering what his own struggles. Beverly, he's an addict just like you. Why is it that I could come in here and I could be tolerant and patient with my sponsee or tolerant and patient of somebody else, but when it comes to my own husband, I can't show the same tolerance and the same patience? It's all about me. You need to satisfy my needs and do what it is you need to do to keep me right. It's not until I let go, y'all. And the only reason why I begin to let go, because you know what? Just like when we was out there using and you got sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired, you're going to get sick and tired of being sick and tired and sick and tired in here on this side of the fence. I don't know about nobody else. I can sit here and tell you what I use and how I use and all that. But guess what? I ain't pick up no drugs in 16 years. So then what is my problem? I can't blame it on the crack I smoke. I can't blame it on the beer because I don't do those things. But it's them same behaviors that keep ending me up in the same place. Beverly, it is not about you. God gave me over 25 years of using and didn't allow me to die. And trust me, I've been in places where I should not be here. Now all of a sudden you got 16 years of some clean time. It is not about you, Bev. The life I'm living today, it is not about me. I believe that God has allowed me to stand here so that I could be of service to him and to somebody else. Everything else is gravy. And if I could come in here and hug y'all and tell y'all I love y'all, then why can't I go home and hug my husband and tell him I love him or tell him it's all right when he's struggling with a defect of character that he hasn't overcome yet? Who, Beverly, somebody didn't give up on you? I'm talking about self-obsession. And the triangle, and I'm right there. And not only do I have to practice that at home, I need to carry that to my job. Really at my job, because they ain't got no program. I work with doctors, they got degrees, and they live off their credentials. My name is so-and-so MD. My name is so-and-so MD. Well, guess what? God gave me credentials too. He gave me the program of Narcotics Anonymous that allows me, it's a new set of tools that I could use in my daily life. Thank you, Father. That I could use in my daily life that helps me to learn how to live one day at a time without the use of drugs and to develop a new character. It's really not just about, because guess what? There's some of us in here, we could stop using and still be the same addict. I ain't coming here to be poor. I ain't coming here to be miserable. I ain't coming here to be unhappy. I ain't coming here to be in pain. They told me I could have a life, a joyful life. And I want that. But what does it mean? It means that I got to go inside. It ain't about trying to fix you. It ain't about trying to focus on what you ain't doing, who you doing. And all. It ain't about that, Beverly. What about you? Look in the mirror. What about you? So that means on Monday morning when I go back to work, I am now humbled because this woman has told me that she is afraid to talk to me. I don't want to project that kind of demeanor to anyone. I want to have a spirit. I strive for a spirit of meekness. I want to be able to be approachable. So now I have to find out, why are you angry? Why is it that every time somebody says something to you, they call it constructive criticism? I don't know about no constructive criticism. Criticism. You know what I'm saying? If you saying something negative about me, it's just negative. I don't see nothing constructive about that thing. It hurt. I don't like it. It hurts. You tearing away at my self-esteem. And that's what the bottom line is. What it is that, Beverly, when someone tells me about myself, I go back to that little girl, you know, when my mom used to say this and my daddy used to say that, I go back there. And I start telling myself negative information, and so I react. You got defense mechanism. I'm going to back you off. But I can't grow that way. I don't want to be the same person I was when I came in here. I'm not the same person I was when I came in here. And I know in order to get to the place that I believe God wants me to be, I got to continue to do some work. I got to continue to go inside. I got to continue to take a look at those things that cause me pain. I cried yesterday, and I cried, and you know I ain't had nothing on in my house, no radio, no TV, no nothing. And I just sat in my car, and I just cried, and I hadn't cried like that in a minute. Because you know what? When you get, I don't know about anybody else, but you get a little time in here, you get some information underneath your belt, you start helping a newcomer, you know, and I start sending myself false messages. Beverly, you strong. Oh, Beverly powerful. You need to go hear Beverly. She got word and all that old kind of stuff. And I start building myself up to be at a place where I'm not. But I had to break down yesterday. I cried because I don't want to be that person anymore. And I believe that that's the place. You know what? Just think about the many times that you were using, and you probably knew you had a problem, and you know, you thought maybe you needed some help or whatever the case may be, but the help really didn't come until you was broke down. And whatever broke down is for you, only you know. But it was at your lowest place where you really couldn't do any more. That's the place where God wants us. I know that's the place where he want me. That's the place where he works with me best. And that's the place I was yesterday. You know, and I thank him today because I don't know what I would have said. I don't know. I don't rehearse. I don't do any of that. You know what I do? I just say, God, you speak through me. And let me help me to talk about me. You know. So today I know that Narcotics Anonymous is a hope program. You know, if you're coming into a workshop and you're not leaving here with some hope, then there's a problem. Somebody in here who's angry needs to know that there's hope. Somebody in here who's selfish needs to know that there's hope. This is a selfless program. It really is about service. When you come outside yourself, Beverly, and you can help someone else, forgive someone else, not take notes, not take tallies or sticks. Okay, he did it this time. That's five already. You done did this five times. What if God would have kept tallies on me? I don't know about nobody else, but I wonder, because I know me. I got up many a time saying, God, I ain't going to do this no more. Lord, please just get me out of this one more time. I promise, if you just help me this one time, I'm not going to do it no more. And he opened up the door, and sure enough, what did I do? What if he kept tallies on me? Where would I be today? So why can't I show the same... I say this because I had to say this to myself when it comes to people I sponsor. You know, I get angry because they may be stuck in an unhealthy relationship. Or they're not going to meetings like I think they need to be going. Or for whatever their struggle may be. Beverly, why you just can't continue to just be there for them? Maybe one day they will get it. But if I get to a place where I throw up my hand and say, look, you know what? Then it really isn't about them. It's really about me. All I know is that this program has provided me more than I could ever even imagine. I am so grateful for Narcotics Anonymous. I'm grateful for my sponsor. You know, I'm grateful for the people who have demonstrated selfless love to me, you know, and in days when I just was stuck, days when I just didn't feel like I wanted to work the program today. I'm gonna share this and then I'm gonna let it go. Right before I got married, I told you that I was obsessed about getting this man. You know, you know, and I like to talk about my relationship. You know why? Because a lot of time, majority of our problems come from relationships. You know, when I'm by myself, I don't have a problem. You know, you ever see people who say, oh, I like being by my, you know, I'm glad I ain't in a relationship. I like being by myself. Well, yeah, that's because you ain't got to deal with nobody else but yourself. It's when you get in a relationship is that when you find out who you really are. So this one particular time, my husband decided, he wasn't my husband then, but he decided he wanted to be with somebody else. And one more time, the self-obsession and the control told me that I needed to go change his mind. So I was standing on a corner. He was in the house. He lived in an Oxford house at this point. He was in the house, and he was in there with the girl, and I was trying to figure out how I was going to get up in there, get him and the girl out the house. And I was angry and in a rage. Now, you know what? I don't know about you, but my high power, my God, always provides me a way out. Whether I want to take it or not, it's a different story. And he sent two people from Narcotics Anonymous down the street while I was standing on the corner in a fit of rage. And one of them people was my sponsor. And she tried to get me in the car. And I told her she don't understand. And she need to leave me alone. Now, you know, sometimes when you say something, once you say it, you can't take that thing back. It's already out. And I said it. And when I said it, I saw the look on her face. And I couldn't take it back. And she backed up from me and she said, okay. And she got in the car and that was it. It made me think about the man who's, I know y'all heard this, the man who's hanging on a string and he said he's waiting on God. And God said in the helicopter, God sending this. And he keep telling the people that he waiting on God. And then finally he fall. And when he get up to heaven, he asked God, why you ain't sin? What happened? I'm waiting on you. He said, I sent 3 people. I wound up going to jail 3 times after that because I refused to get the help that was needed. I was determined that I was going to do it my way. I was determined that I knew what was best for me. I was determined that y'all could not possibly understand what I was feeling, how I was feeling. How can y'all help me? I went to jail 3 times in recovery. I'd never been to jail in my addiction, went to jail on this side. That's an awesome, let me tell you something, that's an awful feeling. You going up in there, and guess what? I had on a business suit each time I went to jail. I was supposed to be going to work. Too busy trying to change something that I ain't got no control or power over. It's funny, I had to hit a serious bottom on this side. I talk a lot about God because he is the head and the ruler of my life, and I know that this is not a religious program, that's true. I religiously smoke crack. Let's get it right now. Y'all say this is a spiritual program, well, then I'm going to talk about God because that is who's head of my life. And I know if it wasn't for him, y'all weren't with me when they pulled the gun out. Y'all weren't, I ain't see none of y'all. Let me look. I ain't see none of y'all. No, y'all wasn't there. Yeah. In the middle of the night when I was in the alley, I could have got my throat sliced. Nah, y'all wasn't there. So I know I'm not, don't get it twisted. I know, but I wasn't like that when I came in here. The closest place I could get to God was you people. All I know is y'all are a group of people that came together and y'all had a solution. And the solution was, well, y'all was not using one day at a time. And guess what? I got on that bandwagon. But then my sponsor told me, Beverly, we addicts just like you. And at some point, you're going to have to. So I'm saying, if you're new in here and you ain't with that God piece yet, that's fine. Just keep coming back. But I'm glad today that he is the one that's in control of my life, and I'm glad it's through pain. You know, today, I don't like it when it comes, but I'm grateful for the after effects. I can't see it while I'm going through. It hurts, you know. But when I get on the other side of that thing and I look back, I am now empowered. I can now able to sit here and share with you and encourage you and tell you, guess what, you struggling with that? Don't worry, I've been there too. And this is what I did, and this is how I got through. You know, it's easy to say let go and let God, but exactly how do you do that? How you do that is you get out the way, Beverly. Stop concentrating on you. You can't fix it. If you could fix your life, Beverly, then you would have been stopped smoking crack a long time ago. It took a place. It took a program. It took a NUP ward. I ain't go to no treatment. He know where to send me. He sent me to a place where they were locking me down and asking me on the hour, who are you? What is your name? You know who the president is. My butt was hanging out, you know. I could even remember being in this nut place and arguing with one of the clients because she was telling me that there was a Channel 1, and I kept telling her, ain't no Channel 1. And we argued that thing down. And on the day of my discharge, guess what I found out? There was a Channel 1. Look, y'all, I wish I could sit here and tell you, guess what, that as soon as I get from down off this podium and I go out that door, that everything gonna be hunky-dory. That's not true. I do not know what will happen. But all I know is this, is that if I keep surrounding myself around you people, if I keep talking about and getting real with somebody about what's really going on with me, not really going on with you, but really going on with me, what's hurting me, I have to take a risk. When I came around here, people were getting raw. They were talking about stuff that was going on. I was like, good Lord, they're telling all their business. Y'all told me I didn't have any. If I could take the chance to do that and become transparent, then I got a chance at a new way of life. And y'all have not failed me yet. All my firsts have been in Narcotics Anonymous. My first car, my first apartment, my first house, my first marriage, my first job. All of those things I've gotten after coming into this program. My first degree, you know, all of those things. Because when I came here, I had nothing. I had nothing. I come from New York. I spent 17 years living on the street, no fixed address. That's my story. My mother abandoned me at birth. She left me at the doorstep. I don't know who my parents are. Don't know who my mother is, nor my father. I was raised with a Spanish-speaking family. Do I look Spanish? And if anybody know anything about Spanish people, they like to drink. So I was doomed from the start. But you couldn't have convinced me that I would be at this place right now. You know, that I had to go through all of that to get to this place. And I'm saying that just for anybody who may be struggling, maybe somebody's not having a good day today. You know, they're here just because, you know. But I'm here to report that what you're going through is preparation. You know, it's preparation because you're going to have to help somebody else. It's really not about you. It's really about somebody else. I'm just grateful for Narcotics Anonymous. I'm grateful for you people. I don't know where I would be without you guys. I'm glad that y'all love me and accept me for me, even with my flaws. Y'all still love me and still care for me, and your only concern for me is that I don't use today. Y'all ain't concerned about what I got on, you know, who my connections were. Y'all ain't concerned about none of that. All y'all concerned about is, Beverly, what you want to do about your life, and how can I help you? And that is the best gift that I have gotten since coming to this program. My name is Beverly. I'm an addict, and I keep coming back.
Alrighty, we're going to thank Manuel and Beverly for sharing. And we have a nice way of closing. Serenity prayer.